Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Jackie Orchard, filling in for Ray Graff, who is finally taking a day off to enjoy some time with his family. Today on the line, we have Food Friday favorite, Chef Rick Orlando, joining us to talk takeout foods and all those guilty pleasure comfort foods that we probably shouldn't be eating, but it's a pandemic, so hey, we are. Rick Orlando is the chef manager of New World Bistro Bar in Albany. You may have seen him taste victory on the Food Network's Chopped program, his PBS show Rick Orlando's TV Kitchen, or heard his podcast 1 Million String Beans. The number to call today is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Or you can send us an email, voxpop@wamc.org. You can give us a call and ask about takeout foods or a recipe that you want Rick to explain to you. Rick, thank you for coming back. Long time no see. How are you?
Hi, Jackie. How are you? Welcome to the Vox Pop Club.
I have a large medal hanging on my wall now. I'm an honorary member.
The honorary member of the WAMC Listen to the Caller Club. Yeah, it's great. Beautiful day. I'm sitting on the deck, so this is a little different for a Vox Pop. Usually I'm sitting across from Ray throwing food at him, but this is going to definitely work.
Yeah, although I wish you were here throwing food at me, this will just have to do.
I know. I thought about it. I woke up this morning and I said, oh, I got to make food to bring to WAMC. And then I said, oh, no, I don't. Oh, how sad.
You know, I think I tweeted at you that you should drop me off some chicken and waffles. And here I sit without any chicken and waffles.
Chicken and waffle free Jackie Orchard.
You know, the engineer, Zach Malloy's looking at me. Charlene Knight, who's answering our phones. None of us have chicken and waffles. And I just...
You know what? You text me next week, I'll drop some off. I'm off for the weekend. Next week, I'll drop you some off.
You know, I think you're joking, but I really am going to text you.
I'm not joking.
Okay.
I deliver.
All
Come
right.
On.
We'll be waiting, all three of us. We're waiting for it.
Yeah.
That's right.
So is this not like the most like fascinating and challenging time for people in the restaurant business?
Gosh,
it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
World.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously we have a pandemic and we have political upheaval, which is actually I'm full support of and want to see more of. But, you know, restaurants are traditionally a very difficult business, right? I can't tell you how many people said to me, oh, you chose a hard business. I love my business. And it is a hard business, but if you enjoy it, it's a fun business. But it's a business that operates on razor-thin margins. So this whole lockdown that started in March has been really, really an enormous challenge for a lot of restaurants. And, you know, usually when I'm on with Ray, I talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. But I have to tell you, on this show, I would like to hear from as many people as possible about their feelings about their takeout, about restaurants opening up with outdoor seating, and just, you know, their experiences, because I don't know how old I am, but I've been doing restaurant consulting for over 30 years. And COVID has been the first time that I didn't feel like I knew all the answers, which is probably good. My wife probably likes that. But normally, you know, when I'm doing restaurant consulting, I could get a very strong grip on market, on numbers, on concept, and help direct people to creating a restaurant that works for them. But this is a big, big mystery, you know? I mean, we're going into this phase right now, right? Phase two, where restaurants are able to open outside with social distancing and masks and sanitizer and all the criteria that, you know, have to be adhered to and everyone's gladly adhering to. But I'm wondering how many people are going to go out, what kind of people are going to go out, and what kind of experience they're expecting by going out to restaurants. Because, you know, restaurants, to me, I mean, I'm a cook, obviously, but I'd say 50% of the time, it's about getting a meal, but 50% of the time, it's about an experience, right? When you go out to a place, there are places that you like, I'm sure, where the food is good, but the place is great. There are places where the food is great, but the place is a little stuffy, and you'll go, you know, you make your choices, right? But for me, I've always been really gung-ho about creating an experience. From my days working in Boston in the East Village right through opening the original New World Home Cooking in Woodstock and the New World Bistro Bar in Albany, the food has been crucial and important and my main focus, but creating an environment, a convivial, you know, bustling, happy, celebratory environment has been a big part of the formula that's made my restaurant successful.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm looking at, oh man, we're not going to be bustling. We're going to have people eating, but it's a different experience. So again, I'm having to rethink the whole model.
Yeah, Rick, we do want to hear from everybody. That is the point of today's show. We want to hear your experiences, the foods that you love right now. And just as a reminder, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Rick, start here. Tell me how New World Bistro has been adapting. When the shutdown happened, when did you pivot? What have you been doing?
That's a good conversation point. So my daughter got married on March 13th in Brooklyn. And the day before she got married, well, the week leading up to her wedding, she got married on a Friday, the COVID situation in New York City was just exploding.
Right.
So the day before she got married, public gatherings were cut from down to 500 person maximum. The day of her wedding, they were cut to 250-person maximum. I was in New York City. I called my team. I said, what's going on? They told me that, you know, we're going to be set at half capacity the next day. The day after her wedding, New York City shut it down to 50-person, and then the following Monday, it was 10 people. So we snuck that wedding in. But I came back from New York on a Sunday and immediately launched into, you know, with my manager, Sarah Jane, and my partners, Annette and her Aura, we went into, you know, a mode. We went into that survival mode. So the first week of the shutdown, which I believe was maybe March 16th, we decided, let's do takeout. Well, at that time, the fear of COVID was beginning to peak to a frenzy. And I watched as we were doing very, very brisk takeout business. And I watched how difficult it was to have social distancing at that stage of the game. You know, when you're cooking on a line in a restaurant, as a saute, a broiler, a grill, fryer, a pizza oven, people are 1, 2, 3 feet apart, sweating, bouncing back and forth. And after that first week, I sat down with Annette from the bistro and we said, you know what? At this point, social distancing is the priority.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to be able to achieve that. So we shut it down. We closed. And we closed for just about 2 months. We reopened, I believe, May 19th. I think we did a Mother's Day thing, and then we reopened May 19th.
Now, are you doing limited dishes, or did you reduce the menu for this takeout?
Well, at the beginning, we did most of the menu. We cut the menu back a little bit, but we did most of the menu for that first week. When we reopened, I did a lot of research, right? There's so much information online on how to do this properly. And I was looking for a way that we can do our flavors and our food in the safest way. And what I came up with was a heat and serve, kind of like a meal kit option, except you really don't have to cook. You just have to heat everything. So what we do at the bistro for our takeout program up until now, and this is all subject to change as we open up next week, and we'll get to that later,
yeah.
Is we cook all the food just to a turn, then we blast chill it down till it's very, very cold, then we pack everything in airtight, sealable plastic containers, and you get an instruction sheet, which how to reheat, where you can either pop it in the microwave, you can put it in the oven or the toaster oven, you can use an air fryer if you have one, or you can put it in a pan. Some dishes like Thai curry stew, the wetter dishes, you can put in a pan and heat up. And, you know, at first we were talking about it. Do you think people are going to want to do that? Well, you know what? Business has been very brisk and people are very happy because the food is safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's fully cooked. I don't have cooks at night climbing all over each other trying to get the food out. Basically, I have 2 to 3 of us in the kitchen in the day set up at different stations, socially distanced, gloves and masks and the whole routine. And we're able to prepare all the food in a very safe and sanitary way. And then the cooks are gone by 4 o'clock, and the food is all in refrigerators. And Sarah Jane, our general manager, and her team are there doing curbside service. we do have a small market that we built in. I don't know if you're familiar with the restaurant. There's the one little dining room to the right off the bar that had a farm table. We brought a deli case, and we put a small market in there. We sell a few little groceries, but mainly we sell stuff that we make in the kitchen out of the case. So you can come in, and we, you know, our rule for now has been mask, gloves. We have hand sanitizer station. You come in, you can look in the case and pick stuff out.
Right.
But most of our orders, I'd say 90%, have been either online orders or call-in orders. And it's a handful because, you know, you're doing 100 to 150 dishes of food in half the time you would normally do for dinner. So having all the food prepared and ready just to bag and hand out has been a godsend for us. And customers like it. You know, they get to tweak it a little bit. They want to brown it a little more under the broiler. They could, you know, if they're really hungry, you put it in the microwave for 2.5 minutes and you're ready to eat. And it works out really well.
Well, Rick, we want to hear all about this. And I'm sure you've got some tips for other restaurants, too. Right now, we need to go to a quick break. When we come back, Rick Orlando, he's going to take your calls, which are definitely piling up. And we've got some emails for you, too, right after this break.
Support for WAMC comes from Big Y, family-owned and operated market with locations throughout the Berkshires, celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England. BigY.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine and spirits retailer for over 40 years, providing products from classic to new labels. SpiritHAUS.com. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, local and organic food and products with a focus on sustainability, open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. All are welcome. Albany's homegrown grocery store, honestweight.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. Today we have a very special guest, one of our favorites, Rick Orlando. Rick, you're here. You're going to answer some questions about takeout food in the Capital Region. We're also going to talk about this looming new reopening of all the patios and outdoor dining only. Lots of exciting things. Crazy time for the restaurant industry. Tell me more about this small market that you guys opened up, and what are some of the products available for people who are wearing masks to come in and get?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with my food, but I have a reputation for creating really great condiments and sauces. So I bottled up everything from my Purple Haze and Dirty Blonde hot sauces. I've made mango ketchup. We have a hot sauce that has no heat. We call it habanada, but it's made with a particular chili that tastes like a habanero with no heat. We have chutneys. We have a lot of our items that were on our veggie tapas plate, like curried cashews.
Okay, hold on. What is chutney? I'm sorry. People say it all the time. I don't think anyone actually knows what it is, so you have to tell us.
Well, let's simplify it. It's kind of like jam or chunky jelly, but it's not just sweet. It's sweet and sour.
Chunky jelly didn't sell, so they named it chutney.
Chutney, you know, it's a sweet and sour condiment, usually made with fruit or tomatoes, but usually fruit, onions, spices, and you add sweetener. We use molasses and maple syrup and then vinegars, so it's got like a sweet and sour kind of flavor, and it's really great to have with, you know, Middle Eastern Asian dishes, because it adds a little. You could add it to your rice, you can throw it in your sandwich. I like to put like mango chutney on a turkey sandwich because it's got like a sweet and sour flavor.
So it's not really like good. Put it on your bagel in the morning. It's more of
You can put it on. You put anything on a bagel in the morning.
Okay.
Just don't tell anybody.
All
you know, some of the other stuff we sell is some of my vegan creations. We have we make tofu feta.
Okay.
So it's fermented tofu that has got a really similar flavor to feta. You know, Sarah Jane makes bottled 8-ounce cocktails, which are in the case. We have a lot of neat stuff that you can take home and cook with. Because, you know, I like people, you know, I've always shared my recipes. I do tons of cooking classes. I'm not one of those chefs that says, it's all a chef's secret. I like people to participate And one of the things I say on the Heat and Eat menu is that thanks for being my partner in the kitchen here, because I'm making the food, but you have to do something. You have to open your oven
or
turn your microwave. Yeah,
I like that.
Team up with me here.
What a friendly chef. It's not snooty. You know, I like that.
Well, you know, there are certain things that I would guess I would call proprietary, but I think I've shared every recipe on my menu because people want them. And you know, if you're willing to make the food at home and you like it, you're probably going to come eat my food again to find something new. So I've always found that that's a good way to be. That old school, you know, chef's proprietary, whatever. You can find anything on the internet now, so what am I trying to hide, right? People actually make my dishes and then post their own recipes for them online, which is really funny. And I have a YouTube channel, and I post a lot of cooking videos, and it's Chef Rick Orlando. It's really popular. But I can't tell you how many times people say, I found your recipe. It's really good. I didn't do this. I did this. I changed this. I changed that. I changed this. And I said, well, that's your recipe now. Now it's your recipe. Was it delicious? Of course it was delicious. Well, then you did the right thing.
You know, I've watched a lot of your videos, and we're going to talk about them in a little bit. But first, we have some callers who I think are just very eager to talk to you. Some have been waiting for a long time. So let's take a call.
Let them in.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
I'm ready. Let's
do
this. First, we're going to go to Nina in East Hoosick. Here we go. Nina, you're on.
Hey, thanks so much. Welcome to Vox Pop as the host, Jackie. And hello, Rick. I'm really enjoying
it. Hi, Nina.
Welcome. Hey. So I have a question for you about your recipes, but I thought I'd share something first. One of the things that I've done in the past, but now I'm really doing more of during COVID, is going, and a lot of people are doing this, is going to the refrigerator and the cupboard, and what I have, I'm making something with. And I like
to
cook.
That's the way.
But something, thank you. But something simple that I've never made is bread pudding. So I bought, this has to do with what happens during COVID in particular. I bought a loaf of, I think, sourdough white. And I kept it in the refrigerator, and I kept saying, I'll get to it, I'll get to it. And it turned into a rock. So I've never, you know, made bread pudding. And the fun of it was I just soaked that. I used soy milk, but you can use any kind of nut or dairy milk, until it became soft. I had two jars of cherries, one Amarena, which, you know, is very, very sweet, and then one jar of cherries that was less sweet. Mixed that in, melted some chocolate, and honestly, and then threw in some beaten eggs at the end. And it was very gratifying, and especially fun was just soaking the bread and until it became usable again.
And that's really, you know, you're giving a really good point about bread pudding that I teach all of my cooks, is that when you make bread pudding, you know, whether you make a custard or just, you know, like you said, milk with a little bit of eggs and sugar, you need to let the, when we make it, we build it and we let it sit on the counter for almost an hour before we bake it, so that that bread becomes like a sponge, because the word is pudding, right? It's not pile of savory croutons. It's a pudding, and that's what you're looking for. And I think a lot of times bread puddings are dry because people don't give the bread a chance to soak up. The other secret I found with bread pudding is that you use a little less bread than you think, because it's going to expand when you pour that custard. It's like dunking a cookie, right, or dunking a bagel. It gets bigger when it expands. It absorbs the liquid. So leave a little air space in the pan so that your bread pudding could, you know, expand, and then you have that really creamy, unctuous, delicious flavor. So that was good. So the sourdough was delicious in there?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, but to tell you the truth, normally you would soak your bread for an hour, but this was really like a rock. It had been in the fridge so long. That's kind of my point, that I found a way to use it. I had to soak it for a couple of days to make it usable.
Oh, geez.
It was just delicious.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
Delicious.
Rick, can you do that? Can you do it for a few days?
Sure, if you keep it in the fridge, you can soak it as long as you want. You know,
just marinating that bread pudding.
And then it was very delicious, and somehow I hit the proportions right, probably, you know, some intuitive knowledge there. And then, I won't go into this in such detail, but I did the same thing with the savory dish, which is I made tapenade, and I didn't just use it as a spread. I used it, and I mixed it with different kinds of pastas on different days. I would like to ask you something, Rick, because your recipes for sauces sound, the titles sound wonderful. Are those available either online, or do you have recipes for them that we can get? And I have a comment about the chutney. Actually, this question. Chutney is traditionally served, of course, with food from India. Was that an Indian or an English addition to Indian food? And could I have the answers to those questions, and particularly about getting recipes for your sauces and condiments?
Well, if you go to rickorlando.com, you can click on recipes, or you can click on my YouTube channel, and there's tons of recipes there, and you can just search, you know, for recipes. There's probably 200 recipes on there spread out over the years. So that's where recipes live. I also respond to emails, so feel free about that. The YouTube channel now is doing well. Just rickorlando.com without a K. RICORLANDO. That's me. And there's a
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you. And what about the origin of chutney?
All right. So I'm going to say something kind of fun. I don't think the English contributed anything to English to Indian cooking except for names.
Take that, imperialism.
Indian food, to me, is one of the seven marvels of the world. It's some of the most unbelievable, fascinating, and delicious foods on the planet. And India is a huge country, so what we know as Indian food is essentially North Indian food. It's a particular type of food. It's like what Americans think of as Italian food is really a particular style of, you know, Southern Italian cooking is what we all know and basically call Italian food. But there are so many regional differences, and it's the same thing in India. Indians have been making chutneys as far back as, you know, there are records of making chutneys, because a chutney is a way to take product, just like ketchup, that is no longer screaming fresh and do something with it before it goes bad, right? I mean, the Heinz Ketchup Company was brilliant. Before refrigeration, when tomatoes would start to get, you know, you get a crate of tomatoes sitting out in the hot summer sun for 3 days, they start to crack and get funky. But if you cook them down with the right pH, with vinegar and salt, they're going to stabilize, and then if they're too tart, then you add the sugar. So that's where chutney comes in, is by stabilizing fruit. Especially think about fruits like mangoes. You know, when they get ripe, they're beautiful, but then suddenly they're mush. So let's make chutney. Let's cook this stuff down and make it delicious. That's one of the things we have in our case. We have a mango ketchup, where we mix tomatoes and mangoes, a bunch of fun spices, and cook them down. And then I build the pH up with vinegar. And then once I have the pH properly, which means it's stabilized, then I add enough sweetener to balance the acidic flavor of the vinegars and lemon. And it's delicious. Human ingenuity at its best.
That's what I'm saying. Ingenuity is the name of the game during this time in particular. It's been a joy to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Enjoy.
All right, Nina, thank you for the call. Rick, you have experience in so many different genres of food. I have to ask you, are there any areas that you are maybe a little weaker in, something that you wish you had studied but you haven't gotten around to yet?
Well, you know, thank you for that. That's my brand. Tell me what you're not good at. My original brand of New World Home Cooking was based on the foods of our immigrant ancestors, right? Years ago, there was a guy named Jeff Smith, the Frugal Gourmet, and he was pretty popular in the 80s, and he had a book called The Foods of our Immigrant Ancestors, and it was very inspiring to me because I grew up in New Haven, Connecticut. I'm Italian-American, but my stepfather is Puerto Rican. My neighborhood was very mixed, and I was exposed to all kinds of foods. And then when I got a little older and started playing underground music, some people's idea of musicians' underground musician food is like a cold slice of pizza, but we discovered that little mom-and-pop ethnic restaurants in cities had the best cheap eats for the money. For like $2, you can eat amazing food. You can eat falafel, you can eat, you know, chopped liver. You can eat all these fun, delicious flavors. So to me, it was inspiring to learn to be everybody's grandmother and learn how to make everybody's food the right way. There are definitely genres of food that I don't know as much about as others, but I'm doing everything. You know what? I've been doing this for 35 years, and I'm still learning all the time by reading and by eating. So I would say some of the stuff that I'm learning more now about the Caucasians, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, that area, Georgia, learning more about that kind of food, because it's very interesting that it has kind of a Persian influence but Russian ingredients. So that's something. And then African food, I've learned a fair amount about Ethiopian food and Cape Verde food coming up, because I used to eat a lot of Ethiopian food. But I'd like to learn more about some of the foods of Africa, because they fascinate me. And I've been traveling a lot more, although the COVID has shut that down. But last year I was in Sicily, Peru, Argentina, and, you know, we went to a couple of the fancy restaurants, but most of the places we ate were street stalls or, you know, little mom and pop hole in the wall restaurants, so we can actually taste what the food is supposed to taste like. And that's my inspiration. And I love the people. I love meeting the people. People are so happy when, you know, a big American guy walks into their kitchen and wants to meet the cook and the chef and talk about food. Even if our languages are clumsy, and my Italian and Spanish are pretty clumsy, but I can definitely find the bathroom. You know, it's having those conversations with people, it just inspires me all the time. So if anybody has a food that I haven't cooked, send it to me, because I want to learn more about it.
Rick Orlando is our guest today. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. In a moment here, we have to go to a break, but I think we can fit in a caller before we do that. So are you up for it, Rick?
I'm ready, yeah.
All right, let's go to Terry in Albany. Terry, you're on.
Hello.
Hey, Terry.
I'm curious, given the limited seating now, both indoor and or outdoor, and then even indoor when it begins, I'm curious how you think restaurants will be handling time limits for tables.
Great
question.
Do you
think they'll be?
That's a really interesting question. I've been asking, you know, as I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, but this is the first time in my life that I don't have all the answers. It's kind of a funny thing to say, but, you know, we'll be opening on Thursday. It's, you know, when we got the notice from the governor, hey, you're opening tomorrow, we weren't ready, you know, because we have to get the tables in and do a new menu. So we're going to have probably, with our patio size, probably 6 tables. So in order for us to open and make it even a worthwhile break even, we do need to make enough money from each table to do that. But I don't think we're going to necessarily impose time limits, but we are going to do it reservation only. And the reservations are going to have to be on our terms. In other words, if we have a 6 o'clock, that's what we have, because we have to space. We're trying to space the tables so we can get two parties a night from each table. So I think that one of the things the American diner is going to have to understand, and there's so much information about this online. There's actually an amazing podcast called Andrew Talks to Chefs. Andrew Friedman, who's a friend of mine and a great food writer, has been talking to chefs all around the country. And the consensus is that it is not going to be going back to the way it was. Things are going to be a little bit different. Restaurants are going to have a little tighter rein on how things are done in order to make this work. And I believe that the consumer is totally on board with it, because you just can't go back to having a waiting line to sit at a table for someone to have, you know, a cheese plate and sit there for 3 hours. So, you know, you have to hope that people are going to actually eat dinner. And I think we're doing reservations. Sarah Jane is at the restaurant now setting up the reservation map, but, you know, that's a whole other Tetris game that you play. But we're looking at 90 minutes per table, roughly, as a reasonable time period. What do you think of that?
So 90 minutes is how long they can stay and eat before you kick them
out? It's not like we're going to kick anybody out, but we're going to basically tell you that, you know, if you make a 6:30 reservation, that table will be sold again at 8 o'clock. So try to be on time. You have to be respectful, because we have gotten killed, and everybody wants us back, but we have to come back with a little bit of a different approach. We can't just do it the same way. It's not going to work. When you say, oh, you're open again, but you only have 6 tables when we normally have 36 tables, that's a big number to try to work around. So we're going to do everything in our power. Obviously, you know, right on the front of our employee manual, it says we make people happy. That's our team mantra. So we want to make people happy, but we also have to make it work. So there'll definitely be, and I'm sure every restaurant will have their own approach to it. Some states are making it reservation only anyway, but we're going to do it reservation only. And frankly, you know, with 6 tables, we'll probably have 12 reservations a night. So my suggestion is don't wait till 5 o'clock on Saturday night to see if you can get a table on Saturday night, because you're not going to get it, you know?
Right.
You want to be ahead of the curve and grab your table. And things are unfolding so quickly. Tomorrow they can say, hey, you can have 10 tables inside. And the next day they can say, no, you don't. It's all, you know, we're right. Basically that shortstop fielding grounders one at a time, at a time, at a time, and hoping there aren't too many bad hops along the way.
Well, Terry, hey, thanks for the call. You bring up a great point. You heard it, everybody. 90 minutes. We're going to take a quick short break. And when we come back, Rick Orlando is here. He's going to answer more of your questions right after this break.
Support for WAMC comes from Pioneer Valley Food Tours, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering food tours and more, highlighting local food producers and their seasonal specialties. PioneerValleyFoodTours.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, now open on Saturdays from 8:30 to 3 at Russell Sage College with reservations. Also accepting online orders for Sunday pickups, TroyMarket.org. Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats. Home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days. Pekarskys.com. And Field Goods, fresh produce, eggs, meat, dairy, small-batch creations, and more from local farms and food entrepreneurs, now offering home delivery, field-goods.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop on this Food Friday. Rick Orlando of New World Bistro Bar in Albany is on the line. He is taking your calls. We're talking about chutney. We're talking about restaurant patios reopening and everything in between. Rick, we've got a bunch left to do on the show. Let's hit a couple emails, a couple calls before we have to wrap things up. What do you say?
I'm game, you know. Bring it on. This is fun. This is like an open forum right now. It's really good.
All right, let's hit these emails. This is from Paul. Paul says, hello, Rick. I attempted to make the curry oil for vinaigrette as per your recipe and grew a white mold on the top of the oil mix within 3 days. The jar was clean. What are your thoughts? Also, he says, congrats on your daughter's wedding.
Oh, thank you. Well, the recipe for the curry oil is to pour boiling water over the curry, stir it, and then float the oil on top and let that infuse for a few days. The only thing I can think is maybe the water wasn't boiling when it hit the oil, because we've never had a problem with it. I have curry oil stashed for months. That's the only thing I could possibly think of, is that, when you make an infused oil with a powdered spice, you make mud, right? You put boiling water on top of the spice, you stir it, you put vegetable or clear oil, you know, light flavored oil on it, shake it up, and then you let it settle and you let it sit. And over time, the flavor ketones in the spices get suspended in the fat molecules of the oil, and your oil tastes delicious. You can make curry oil, cinnamon oil, chive oil, any of that kind of stuff. But you really always want to use boiling water, because you don't know with dried spices if there's any living bacteria on them. That's why dried spices should always be cooked into the food, not sprinkled on, especially, you know, cumins and curries and things like that.
Oh, I've been doing it all wrong. Oh, boy.
Well, that could be sitting on your counter. You know, if you have a jar of curry powder that maybe wasn't fully airtight sealed, sitting out on your in your pantry for, some people have spices for years.
True, yes.
You know, hitting it with boiling water is like an instant sanitation of it, so That's all I could think of on that one.
I kind of feel like my pantry is sort of like back when there were pirate ships and they kept those spices for like decades. I kind of feel like I don't even know the last time I checked the dates on my spices.
Yeah, well, they do definitely go flat for sure. I mean, right. You could always give them a quick roast in a dry skillet just to bring the flavor back on them. But yeah, after a while, They're not going to help you much.
Learning so much today. Okay, this email is from David in Kingston, New York. This is about hard-boiled eggs. So I think I cracked the challenge of getting easily peelable hard-boiled eggs. Once cooked, I immediately run them under cold water, crack the shells, and keep them immersed while I peel them one by one. The trick is then getting that thin membrane between the edible part and the shell to come off with the shell. It seems to work for me most of the time. My guess is the cold water helps to separate the shell from the still warm cooked egg inside. What do you think? Is this the magic to peeling hard-boiled eggs?
Okay, so hard-boiled eggs, as you know, simple and obvious as the idea of a hard-boiled egg is probably one of the most discussed controversial cooking methods online. Google perfect hard-boiled eggs and your Google feed will go into 40 or 50 pages deep. Everybody has a different method.
Wow.
I also use the cold water method. I start my eggs in cold water, and when the water hits boiling, I set my timer for 7 minutes, and at 7 minutes, I put those eggs in the sink and run cold water and even ice on them to cool them down, and they peel relatively easily, and they're not really green or hard on the inside. But everybody I know has a different method. The bottom line for me with hard-boiled eggs, if it works for you, it works for you. But you certainly could get lost in the depths of the internet reading everyone's different approach to hard-boiled eggs. That's
wow.
For sure.
I had no idea that the world of hard-boiled eggs was so controversial.
You're going to write me later. You're going to say, oh my God, Rick, I spent all night reading hard-boiled
egg
recipes.
I'm going to be in an internet black hole looking at hard-boiled egg videos.
Hard-boiled eggs and the flat world theory. They'll both be up there.
That's what I'll be doing on my Friday night. So that's settled.
All right. Sounds like fun.
There's one more email. This is from JL. And I really like this question, actually. She also says she's friends with you on Facebook, so she follows your posts. She says, what obligation do chefs have to their community, and why is that important?
Well, if you know me, I have been an outspoken supporter of community causes since even before I had my own restaurant. I mean, everything from working with the original AIDS Council, I work with the food bank, we're working with Black Lives Matter. I think that if you are a restaurant in a community, you are not only a business, but you're a part of the community. Your community works in your business. They support your business, and they see your business every day. And if you look at my website, it'll say Rick Orlando, Chef Activist. I've always been an activist because I believe that we have the impact as chefs to actually give people not only a place, and of course with COVID that place has been kind of taken away, but you know, think about the movie Casablanca, right? I mean, the restaurant, the cafe has been a place where ideas have grown, where people meet and they talk and they make plans. But also, you know, as a restaurant, we're involved with a lot of things that affect our immediate community: food, nutrition, employment opportunities, you know, so many things that are directly related to the issues we face now in the country. Chefs are right in the middle of all the time. So you could be a cook who just puts his head down or her head down and makes great food, or you can be someone who's connected to your community. I'm lucky to work at New World Bistro Bar. My partner, Scott and Annette, who own the Spectrum, have always been involved with the community. I've always been involved with the community. And I think that, is it an obligation, JL? I don't know if it's an obligation. No one has an obligation to do anything, but it is definitely something that when you connect with the community connects back with you. So it's a win-win, right? So when I'm out supporting causes, especially with the food bank and, you know, the Center for Positive Health, and right now, you know, we're working with different community groups, it's a crucial method of showing that we're involved. And I want to point this out, and I don't want to annoy anybody, but all of these events that you go to, where the restaurants are supplying free food to help raise money for children's charities or for whatever we're doing, it's always the local restaurants. You never see Burger King. You never see Olive Garden. It's the local restaurants who support their community because it's our community. It's us. It's our employees. It's our family. It's the people we've known. I mean, I've had, between New World Bistro Bar and New World Home Cooking, probably over 1,000 employees in my life. They're all part of my community, and I support them all, and I try to listen to what they have to say and do what I can to support their passions. How's that?
That is, you know what? I'll take it. That's a good answer. It's a pretty good answer. All right. Let me tell you, we've got about 8 minutes left to the show. I never have enough time with you. We've got 4 callers that we should definitely get to. So let's try to get to everyone. And I think let's start with Mandy. She's been waiting a long time. She's in East Greenbush. Let's go to Mandy now. Mandy, you're on.
Hi, Mandy. Hi, Mandy. Did we lose you?
Mandy, you there?
Oh, Mandy.
Zach, we lost Mandy. We'll just have to wonder. We made her wait too long. That's the problem.
I won't sing Barry Manilow.
All right, Mandy, we're sorry. Please call us back. All right, let's try Nancy and Rhinebeck. Here we go. Nancy, you're
Hi,
on.
Nancy.
Hi, Rick. Hi, I don't know if you remember me. My late husband, Herb, and I loved your restaurant in Woodstock.
And oh, yeah. Hi.
I don't know if you remember me or not.
Are
you still there?
I'm trying to conjure your face, but yes, oh, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, well, I ran into your wife in Woodstock within the last year or so. But anyway, I just love the Valentine's Day specials and the New Year's Eve. We always came New Year's Eve. It was really a wonderful experience just in the way that you would walk through the dining room to greet the patrons, you know, and it was so friendly. So I just want to say that we really missed it when you left.
Well, I'm still in Albany. You can find me up in Albany. I'm there.
Come to New World
Bistro. It's a little bit of a ride. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Where are you located up there? Where is it?
We're on 300 Delaware Avenue, right next to the Spectrum Theater. We're a little bit south of the city, heading towards Del Mar. In a neighborhood.
Oh, great place.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say that.
Well, thanks for the love, Nancy. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Nancy. I appreciate it a lot.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Okay. See, that goes back. That goes back, Jackie, to saying that restaurants are community places, correct?
Yeah, that was kind of perfect timing. It's almost like you planned it. I'm a little suspicious.
I did.
You know what, Rick? Mandy came back. Mandy, you're on. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you very much. I'll make this quick.
Hi, Mandy.
Looking for suggestions for making homemade caramel sauce. It either burns or the sugar clumps up. I can't seem to do it right.
Well, you have a recipe, right? A ratio recipe. You're using what, buttercream, sugar?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The secret is don't touch it while it's cooking. Tip the pan.
Yeah, I tried that first, and it burned. So maybe the heat was too high?
Yeah, the heat might be too high. I mean, once that sugar gets hot, it gets really hot. Also, if your cream is cool, you can remove it and from the heat and gradually add the cool cream into it. That'll bring the sugar temp down a bit. But I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is they stir it. And when you stir it, the cool air hits the sugar and it crystallizes. So if you tip the pan, as you see the edges starting to get soft, you kind of tip the pan just enough for those edges to kind of roll like waves over the sugar. And it should be good.
Yep.
I mean, it takes a little practice. Martha Stewart will tell you how to do it. And when in doubt, check Martha. Martha's the queen of everything. No, I'm serious. I've told so many of my cooks come to me for a baking question, and I'll say, ask Martha. Just ask Martha. Martha Stewart has a team of research chefs that are the best in the country. One of my old cooks used to work for her. And she was telling me that they have, every recipe is tested like 20 times. So, people go to websites, and this is a little input I want to give. People go to websites and just print recipes from anywhere. But there are just like anything else, just like news sources, there are vetted recipe sites. Martha Stewart, Bon Appetit, New York Times. These are places they're never going to post a recipe that hasn't been thoroughly tested in all kinds of kitchens and all kinds of soaps. So I always recommend Epicurious, another good one. Go to the pros to get your recipes.
There you have it,
Thank
Mandy.
You so much.
Next time we're going to have to get Martha Stewart on next time so she can answer it for you.
Can I be on with her?
Sorry, I love Rick Moore.
Thanks, Mandy.
If you can get Snoop Dogg, we'll all hang out. That'll be great.
That's perfect. That sounds like my dream show, actually. All right, we have two more callers. Let's go to Martha now. Let's see. Martha, you're on.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
Hi, Martha.
So, how's it going, buddy? So
good.
I have to say that COVID cooking is, I love to cook and I'm a good cook, but Steve and I ate out 5 times a week before this, and all of a sudden I'm cooking, 3 meals a day, every day. And what has changed is my idea about leftovers, because I hate eating the same thing 2 nights in a row. So it's always like, I'll only make this much, or there was a lot of waste involved in this story, but now there's not, and I cook. I don't care anymore if we eat the same thing for 3 nights. And we've been following, we made your tandoori a bunch, and I made some banana chutney last weekend. That was delicious. But here's my, and I don't know how I'm going to feel about eating out, but I have begun take, take out with the restaurants that I trust and love. So that's been good. But so I want to make this onion tart. And I'm so distracted that I can't really stand still and caramelize the onions. So here's my question. Can I do it in the slow cooker?
You know what? You probably could if you start them in a pan first and get the fat thoroughly integrated and then put them in a slow cooker. Why not? That sounds like fun. I would try it. Caramelizing onions. Steve Barnes recently had a post about the magic of four-hour caramelized onions. They take longer than you think. But
I know. It takes a long time.
I'm going to try that tonight. I'm going to get my onions going in a big skillet, and then I'm going to put them in a crock pot and see what happens.
Will you text me tomorrow also?
Yes. I would leave the lid off.
Yeah.
But I have a question for you, because I'm going to tell you a really funny story. Since the day of my daughter's wedding on March 13th, where we had lunch, I have not eaten anyone but my own food.
We just started last week.
I'm down 30 pounds.
How many pounds? Yeah,
30,
I know. It's crazy.
30, because I have not had piles of French fries thrown at me. You know, it's not like I'm cooking extremely one way or another. We have pasta. I make bread, but I'm eating less. But, yeah, using leftovers is like, it's like being on Chopped. And it's really fun to take the leftovers and make them into something else.
It's great.
Yeah, I saw a great line on a menu years ago in Soho. Soho had soup of the day, and then the description under soup of the day was, yesterday's specials make the best soup today.
Right. Exactly. So, I've been listening to Andrew's podcast, too, and it's wonderful.
Okay.
Wonderful.
It's great, right? Yeah.
All right, Rick and Martha, I know you guys love each other. We got to keep moving. Thanks, Martha. Thanks. All right, we have one last caller. We got to be super quick, though, Rick. Super quick so we can fit him in. Here we go. Rob, you're on. You got to promise me you'll keep it to, like, 30 seconds and less.
I will, yeah. Hey, Rick, you probably don't remember, but I'm Rob Turner. I'm a musician, and we played your club, New World Home Cooking. Are you going to have live music at your new restaurant up there?
Real quick.
No, we don't have room for that, Rob. It's too small.
All right, there you have it, Rob. I'm sorry. We are just about out of time. My apologies to everyone who didn't get to talk to the wonderful Rick Orlando. I want to thank Rick Orlando from New World Bistro for being with us today. Support for Vox Pop comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts, specializing in black garlic and black garlic products with custom-made infused blends of sea salts and hot pepper blends. RollingRockSalt.com. Thank you to our engineer, Zach Malloy. The wonderful Charlene Knight took your calls. I am Jackie Orchard, filling in for the legendary Ray Graff. Thanks again for joining us on Vox Pop. We will return next week with Medical Monday. Stay tuned now for the best of our knowledge and have a great weekend. Stay safe.